We hope you enjoy the following presentation of New Values for a New Age, Part 2, by Dane Rudyar. This recording is 26 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA, or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudyar.
Now, 2,500 years ago was about 600 BC. At least it was at the beginning of the century. And it has been said by some author who have been student of evolution that it was the end of the archaic ages. It was the time of Pythagoras and the great Greek philosopher Plato in Greece. It was the time of the Buddha in India. It was the time of many great teachers who brought a completely new type of mentality to mankind. A kind of mentality which is based on order, on the sense of order, of proportion, of measure, of geometry, of abstract form. Until then, if you deal, for instance, with even the great religious books of the past, even the Bhagavad Gita and so on, you will find that all the so-called spiritual concepts are referred to the biological. Now, for instance, the idea of Atman, the self, Atma meant the breath at first. Everything is related to the sea, to the breath, to food, to factors which had to do sex, also factors which had to do with the biological process, seen in a highly spiritualized, cosmic, impersonal or more than personal, superpersonal, so-called divine kind of aspect. It was only after the 6th century BC that mind began to be conceived as something independent from the biological, a process which could free itself, the result of a process of freeing oneself from the biological and the emotional, the development of reason, an autonomous principle of mental activity. And of course, you know, how much reason was worshipped, not only in Greece, but even during the French Revolution in the end of the 18th century. Unfortunately, in Greece, that mental development began, materialized, crystallized into the syllogistic, the rhetoric kind of syllogistic kind of processes of mental, intellectual operations. And that is what Europe inherited during the medieval age. Endless arguments about purely abstract situation. So that in a certain sense, we can very well say that there was a very basic kind of failure that developed in the Greek period. And Rome inherited that failure and could only produce extraordinarily good administrators, which to some extent were also related to the satraps of the Persian Empire in the past. But it became a principle of rigid order, of legality, of non-mutable thing. And of course you have that also in another way in the Hebraic law, which also became so rigid and so on. Now that of course led to a reaction which produced the devotional aspect of the medieval kind of religion, of love, whether it was in Christianity or in the Northern Buddhism in India. With the Renaissance, you have another kind of effort at bringing back that concept of the mind in operation, but in a slightly different way because of the things that had happened before and because the relation of the church to the new scientist was in rather unparalleled kind of religion, of relationship. And with the control of matter, with the development of pure empiricism, of intellectualism, of rationality, and a division between the rational and the biological, between the mental and the emotional, we have a situation which has been responsible for much that has happened in this particular period of our evolution at the present time. And so, in a certain sense, because also with the Renaissance and the 18th century, there was an overdevelopment of the abstraction, of the intellectual, of the rational, the formal, the formalism of Louis XIV and the Versailles Garden, the abstraction of the encyclopedists of the 18th century, which they called enlightenment, but an enlightenment which was purely a rational kind of enlightenment. We have also come to a situation where the development of that mind has been completely bound to the control of matter, to the analysis of matter, material object, which could well be, which could easily be the substance for the development of that mind, of that particular kind of mind. And what we are seeing now, you see, is the result of that development, which has produced extraordinary results technologically, has changed the whole pattern of the world and made possible the development of a global culture. A global culture, however, which is still in the making. And the question is, how is that global culture to develop? And that is where we stand today, you see. But we have to realize that the question of passing from the national boundary of the whole type of culture to a global planetary culture depends essentially on how we can transform the kind of mental process which have been developed during the process of civilization, which both in Greece and in Europe of the classical period really failed to a large extent to live up to the possibility of a constructive application. Now, we can speak of the New Age and the Aquarian Age, and you know the Aquarian Age is the idea of the man who carried the urn of water, and the water is flowing down, and this is a symbol of electric power, of new energies, electromagnetic energy, electronic power, atomic energy, or whatnot. But that power, which may enable us to make a global society, a global culture, which is will be no longer a local culture, but a planetary culture, that power has to be contained. It has to be contained in an urn, as it were. And that urn is the kind of mind which, unfortunately, we have not developed as yet, because we have developed a mind which did not contain spiritual power or cosmic power, but which was completely hypnotized on dealing with matter and the analysis of matter. Now, I must be brief. As I see today, there are three possibilities that we can contemplate for the future. We can, of course, to start with the negative aspect, we can, of course, come to a situation of increasing chaos. We can, whether it is a chaos from nuclear war or from catastrophes, which may have been induced by what we do to the atmosphere, to the land, to everything that changes the condition on the Earth's surface or even the Earth's crust. But there is also the possibility, there are two other possibilities. One of them, which sometimes people are not willing to consider too seriously, is the possibility of a new world religion, which would serve as the cement, as the integrative force, to bring together the remains of those various cultures of the past. You see, those cultures are still in existence. They are very powerful still. They are very powerful in India. They are very powerful in among Islamic people. They are very powerful in America and in Europe. Europe perhaps more than America. But still, it's amazing how much here we fail to understand that our situation may require that we change completely the foundation of our so-called Euro-American culture. Because, of course, what we have is only the inheritance of the European culture, developed in a new way, in a new land, virgin land, by eradicating all the people who were there before, just like Greece, to some extent, left its mental tradition to Rome. Europe has given its mental tradition to America, and American universities are worshipping the old pattern of the European universities also. Now, how to bring all those cultures and the remain of it together is a problem which has to be faced perhaps in a way in which it is not usually faced. It may be that because the culture is essentially an irrational process, it is something which deals with the deep emotion, the deep feeling, the deep organic sense of the individual who belong to those cultures. It may be that the only way you can transmute liberate the individual from those attachments is to have a broader kind of attachment to a new inflow of spiritual religious power, which would, as it were, be like a vast tide flooding the cultural remains of and the religious remains of all the cultures that are now constituting the earth. Now, when we are dealing with the process of changing situations and what to do to promote a world affair situation, a world organization, we have to realize that America is only a small minority, and we have to deal with the masses of India, of China, and so on. And I mean the masses. I don't mean a few intellectuals. I mean the masses of the people. And how to bring those masses together and organize them in terms of a new global culture, which would have to be culture, in a sense, because still humanity is bound to the earth. And the larger number of human beings on this earth are bound to the soil on which they are born and want nothing else but to deal with that soil and to bring it, as it were, to flower through their own way of life and their own culture. So there may be a need for a world religion, like, for instance, the Baha'i movement. Baha'i religion was started 100 years ago in Persia, and which is the first religion in the world which has as its main foundation the unity of mankind and the definite organization of humanity into a vast system of parliamentary and super parliamentary kind of organization with bodies of laws and so on all ready and all formed there, ready to operate if, and that is of course the if there was a real breaking down of our cultures, if there were a big crisis which would make invalid so much that we have taken for granted in every country of the world. Now, of course, there is also the other aspect, the other possibility, which is the one that here in America particularly we are far more fond of contemplating, and which in a certain sense doesn't necessarily have to be in opposition to the first, could be related to it, but which has very definite characteristic of its own. And it is, of course, the idea of building a global democratic federation which would be based on compromise, on eclecticism, on synthesis, and a kind of enlightened kind of individualism. Now, this, of course, may seem to us a very wonderful and optimum kind of process, and I myself would be very happy if it could work out. But we have to realize that in order to work out the possibility, to my mind at least, in order that it can work out, there are certain conditions, particularly two things, two factors have to be stressed, which sometimes people are not willing to consider. The first thing is that you have the idea of the complete, total sovereignty of the individual. As long as that is in operation, there cannot be, to my mind at least, there cannot be any global federation of the masses of mankind. There are other things which could make that union, that substantial, concrete kind of possibility of formation of a global world, is to realize that the Earth is as a planet, is a complete whole which is far more than physical, that we are part of it, that we are not some mysterious soul which are dropped into that alien planet Earth to learn terrible lessons or atone for our sins or wear out our karma and so on, but that we are part of it, that we have a definite function, we belong to it. And this Earth, by which I mean not only the physical Earth, but all that is beyond, perhaps as far as the orbit of the moon, all that is a living organism which has body, soul, mind, spirit, just as much as we have today. Now, this, you see, give to the idea of a united humanity a concrete emotional, as it were, a foundation, because there we know we are part of a whole, a greater whole. We are part of it. We belong to it. As individuals, we have a certain place and function to perform, but we perform it to some extent as cells within a larger organism. And the main thing for us is to find our function, as well as to realize that that function must be or should be conscious and individualized, because you are human being and not amoebas or cells. Therefore, it must be a conscious function, a relatively independent function, but it must be a function, a functional kind of individualism, you see. Now, this new kind of individualism on one hand, a new image of humanity, of mankind, as part of a new image of the Earth, this, I think, is what you might have called the symbols of salvation, the redeeming symbol of our present stage of conflict today. Without those great symbols, however we work them out, whether it is through a religious fervor or through a enlightened kind of individualism, accepting its freedom in a functional way, accepting to play its part and to commit itself to the welfare of the whole, of the whole organism and so on. Without that, I do not think we can really realistically hope for too much to build smoothly a gradual transition to a basic world order. That doesn't mean, of course, that every effort that are being made to spread the idea of a world society, to show the problem that we are facing in a realistic manner, and that is where the book of Mr. and Mrs. Miche is excellent, because it shows very clearly some of the basic problem that we are facing. But the question is that how did those problems arise? You cannot just merely say that they arise because of technology and modern society, industrialization, and so on. Why did industrialization arise? Why did it turn out the way it did in a negative, destructive sense? Why did the millionaire or the robber baron of the 19th century used that new industrial energy of steam and so on to control population and to become great ruler like the prince and the dukes of the medieval time? Why all those things happened? You can only understand why if you take the larger picture and see where the situation really come from and where we are at the present time. And it is then, you see, that we can really find out where we stand in relation to that situation. Where do we stand? That is the important thing. In one of my books, I started by saying that this is the most important question that you can ask of anybody today. Where do you stand in relation to your culture? Where do you stand in relation to the possibility of a transition to a new age? What part do you want to play in it? Do you understand what it is that can be done? And do you understand what is essentially to be done? Now, of course, I am not there to give you a solution to all those problems. That would take much too long time. And I have no one, of course, I myself particularly, have the power to provide the solution. But all what can do is to offer general principles. And that is what I have tried to do in some of my books, like We Can Begin Again Together and other books that have been mentioned before. From my point of view, what we need today, more than anything else, is a clear mind, free from Western society, free from our culture, free from all the things that we take for granted, from the assumption of our culture, of science, of technology, of what is the greatness of either the European way of life or the American way of life or the French culture or the German culture or Islamic culture or the Jewish culture and so on. We have to develop that kind of mind. But that means thinking. It means a profound, deep concentration on basic issues and problems. And that is the thing which, unfortunately, very few people are willing to do at the present time, because there has a great deal of emphasis has been put upon the idea of feeling, especially among the young people. But you cannot base a new world on feeling. You can decondition yourself from the past through feelings, but that is only the first step. Each one has to discover where he or she stands, where does she belong, where he or she can function the best in relation to whatever change is taking place, and what that change really means. Now, that is the basis on which I think we can begin again together. Wherever we stand, we should consciously, deliberately, objectively, unsentimentally, courageously, we must act. We must commit ourselves. But we can only do that significantly on the basis of general principles which are based on a real understanding of where we stand and where we are, where from we have come, and to which possible future we are going. We must commit ourselves consciously, deliberately, knowing why we do it. And I think all else is a dream. And all collective dreams have a nice way of ending into a nightmare. So I can only ask you the whole question which once ran through the whole India: be awake, arise, and act. Thank you.
This is the end of New Values for a New Age, Part 2, by Dane Rudyar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar at www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com.